Throw the best birthday party ever that your child will always talk about. Big Air Trampoline Park inside Fieldhouse USA at the Polaris Mall can do just that. Award-winning birthday party packages start at just $300, and all birthday parties include pizza, drinks, a party room with a party host, grip socks, printed invitations, and all 40 attractions at Big Air Trampoline Park. It's a birthday party you and your kids will never forget. Book your party today. Big Air Columbus, where the fun never ends. Visit bigairusa.com/Columbus for details.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Wake up, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. And we want to thank you all for subscribing to our show. We're going to deep dive today a number of big stories. Trump's UN speech went there basically with a wrecking ball, set the place on fire. But I think it was intentional sabotage because there are a couple of things that unfolded nearby the United Nations, capturing massive amounts of listening devices and SD cards and all. They're saying a foreign government was potentially involved. The escalator intentionally stopped when he made his appearance. The teleprompter stopped. So I think there was intentional sabotage happening there. But we're going to look at the substance of his speech as well.
Plus, Kamala Harris is back. I know you missed her. She's back to promote her book. And she says things that maybe would have helped her on the campaign trail, like men shouldn't compete in women's sports. That's nice, right? She's trying to position herself as a more centrist candidate. We're watching this and thinking, I don't miss her.
No,
but we're going to look at her.
Well, and I have a lot of questions too. I mean, we'll save it. I'll save my firepower. But like, why is she doing this? Like, the Democratic Party does not want her. Mm-hmm. So what is she doing? Just trying to save face with this book? So anyway, we're going to unpack all of that. I just have a lot of questions about it because she says she's not going to run and the Democratic Party does not want her to run. And we'll show you her favorability rating. So I'm like, why is she doing this? Also, Mark Goodwin is going to be here from Unlimited Hangout. Of course, he works with Whitney Webb at Unlimited Hangout. Now, a number of years ago, we had Mark on the show. He was predicting this move towards a cashless society and how we would use and try to get rid of U.S. debt, basically by backing it with stable coins and a biometric surveillance state in many ways led by Palantir. Guess what? It's here. And he was correct. So Mark is going to be joining us today. We're going to deep dive Palantir. We're going to deep dive all of this biometric surveillance and the EU is done with cash. They do not want you using cash anymore because they want to track everything you do. So we're going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about the link between autism, the link between autism and Tylenol use by pregnant women. We have an expert on about that as well, because liberals are saying, I don't want to hear this because President Trump said it. Then I'm going to chug Tylenol to my pregnant baby. Boy, they sure showed The baby.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a look at that and have an expert on to help us break down the real data.
Also, new details emerging in the death of Charlie Kirk, the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Roger Stone is here, and he says there's a lot of similarities to what happened in JFK. So we're going to break down all of the latest details on that and so much more on today's show. But first, yes, I'm wearing my bearskin hoodie. I just had to walk the dog, and it's actually pretty cold out here in the Rocky Mountains. And it's pouring down rain as we speak. So I was outside in my bearskin hoodie trying to keep warm and walking the dog before the show. And bearskin hoodie is now my favorite hoodie, by the way. These guys are fantastic. Smart people are locking in their winter gear right now. In fact, right before the show, we were all talking on the staff here, all the men on the staff. We're saying, yeah, I want to get one of these. And so you can right now, and you can get 60% off only if you get your hoodie early. All you need to do is text the word redacted to 36912. Or if you want to go to the website, you can do that too, which is bear.skin/redacted. Get 70% off. These things are like a tank. Plus, it zips right into the heavy storm rain jacket to become 100% waterproof. So Natalie was like, ooh, you got caught in a rainstorm just a few minutes ago. I was like, yes, I did. But I was totally dry because I had the outer rain shell right on there, the soft shell. So anyway, go there right now. Go to text the word redacted, 36912, to lock in your 60% off again. 36912. And I also really love how they have, you can pick out different patches as well and put them on the side. So I put the American flag patch right here on the side, and I have the Don't Tread on Me patch, and you can mix and match which ones you like. So these are the two that are adorning my hoodie right now.
I'll make sure I don't tread on you.
Don't tread on me.
I won't do it.
I've been pretty pissed lately. I mean, everything that's happened to Charlie Kirk, all the lies, all that, the hiding of information that they're keeping from us. And I've just been really furious about the move towards censorship, the massive move towards censorship, particularly in the European Union and these other countries. And President Trump went to the EU, went to the UN today, basically to blast what's happening in Europe and all of these other countries. Donald Trump walked into the UN General Assembly today like a wrecking ball, like he set the building on fire. He called out the organization as weak, corrupt, globalist. He used these words. He said they are complicit in the erosion of national sovereignty, nations turning over their autonomy to the globalist cabal. I mean, he basically said everything. He ripped the United Nations for facilitating the U.S. southern border crisis. Like, I couldn't believe he actually admitted to this. We covered this on the show more than a year ago when we had that information and the facts that pointed to the U.N. facilitating the massive money laundering scheme into the United States southern border. Watch this moment.
In Western countries and their borders. In 2024, the UN budgeted $372 million in cash assistance to support an estimated 624,000 migrants journeying into the United States. Think of that. The UN is supporting people that are illegally coming into the United States, and then we have to get them out. The UN also provided food, shelter, transportation, and debit cards to illegal aliens. Can you believe that? On the way to infiltrate our southern border.
Yeah, we were showing you those UN cards. You guys remember that over a year ago? Like these UN debit cards? What? It was all being facilitated by Alejandro Mayorkas and the Biden administration. They were allowing this to happen, but the UN was footing the bill and the money laundering scheme that, you know, all, you know, that funneled these like debit cards to these individuals. It was an invasion. So I'm glad he called them out for it right to their faces. Trump, and by the way, Katie Pavlich was there, journalist, and she was sitting there and she said, you know, they're not laughing, the people in the audience. They're terrified. She said, like, the looks on their faces are like, holy smokes. Trump says that the other countries are going to hell if they don't close their borders. He called out Europe. He said, Europe is collapsing.
Europe is in serious trouble. They've been invaded by a force of illegal aliens like nobody's ever seen before. Illegal aliens are pouring into Europe. Nobody is ever, and nobody's doing anything to change it, to get them out. It's not sustainable. And because they choose to be politically correct, they're doing just absolutely nothing about it. And I have to say, I look at London, where you have a terrible mayor, terrible, terrible mayor, and it's been so changed, so changed. Now they want to go to Sharia law, but you're in a different country. You can't do that. Both the immigration and their suicidal energy ideas will be the death of Western Europe if something is not done immediately. They cannot, this cannot be sustained.
Yeah, and he said, your countries are going to hell. Basically, like no uncertain term. And we see that that's happening across Europe. I mean, European countries are collapsing in real time under the weight of their own stupidity and illegal border migration, turning off all of your power, moving to crazy green initiatives. He called out all of it. So on Sunday, though, the Times of London published a report saying, hey, you know, Trump's coming on Tuesday. And this was on Sunday.
The headline was How Trump Plans to Unleash America First on the United Nations.
So you could look it up for yourself. But anyway, what happened was in this report, to mark Trump's arrival, UN staff joked that they might just turn off the escalators on President Trump simply to tell them that they ran out of money. Well, guess what happened? So President Trump and Melania are getting ready to walk up into the speech. And guess what happens? The escalators running fine, then suddenly, boom, they shut him off. Trump's like, what the hell is going on here? You know what? Fine. Melania's like, well, we're walking, these a-holes. They did it on purpose. So they reported this on Sunday. Carolyn Leavitt, White House press secretary, just tweeted a moment ago. She said, if someone at the UN intentionally stopped the escalator as the president and first lady were stepping on, they need to be fired and investigated immediately. But it got worse than that. That was not the only piece of, like, sabotage. I think it's absolutely sabotage. Then the president was starting to speak. And just as he was starting to speak, the teleprompter went down on purpose. Watch.
Very much appreciated.
So his speech disappears from the teleprompter.
And I don't mind making this speech without a teleprompter, because the teleprompter is not working. I feel very happy to be up here with you, nevertheless. And that way you speak more from the heart. I can only say that whoever's operating this teleprompter is in big trouble.
Yeah. So it was sabotage. It was done on purpose.
He handled it well. I mean, someone was trying to embarrass him.
100%.
And he is above being embarrassed in that way. This person has been the victim of lawfare.
And he called it out,
too. No matter what you think about it, he has been the victim of lawfare. And so clearly someone was trying to embarrass him, and he just shook it off. But I do hope that there's punishment for that, because this is the world stage, and this is an organization that our tax dollars go to. Okay.
Yeah. So again, as I mentioned, Katie Pavlich was there in the audience, and she said these people were like, you know, I'm here and they are not laughing. They actually look kind of terrified.
Well, Kamala Harris went on The View today and said that the United Nations, they laugh at President Trump. Well, okay, that brings me to ask the question, what did you know? Did you know that there was some kind of effort to sabotage him with embarrassing stunts? Curious, right? She says that they have laughed at him in the past. This reporter, Katie Pavlich, says, no, they actually look terrified because President Trump is saying, we're not here to play your globalist games.
Kenya Montillo in our chat says, do not be fooled. He's still reading redacted. Redacted's fooling you. Well, he opened up his speech, right? He had a printed copy of his speech and he opened it up and he started reading his speech instead of reading the teleprompter. Like, we're not fooling you. Like, yeah, instead of using the teleprompter, he opened up his speech. He had it in a binder and was reading it. So the same way that happened to Bill Clinton, famously during the State of the Union address a number of years ago, Bill Clinton was an amazing speaker. And the teleprompter went out and he just sort of started ad-libbing. Sort of speaking there, I think, until he got his notes together. I don't even know if he had a speech in front of him, to be honest with you, Bill Clinton. Anyway, enough of that. Well, a congressional bombshell went off this morning, and we're finally getting answers from YouTube as to why certain channels were banned, blocked, removed for political speech. Representative Jim Jordan, months ago, started a process of subpoenaing Google and YouTube for why they removed and deplatformed so many conservatives for covering COVID. Elections or other controversial topics. YouTube is now admitting, yes, they did that, and they're sorry about it, and it won't happen again. Wink, wink, we'll see. So this happened, some context here. Back in March of this year, Jim Jordan sort of went on a subpoena spree of social media platforms for suppression of conservative speech. Specifically, he wanted all communications between YouTube and the Biden administration or third parties who are intermediaries to the Biden administration. Did they coordinate censorship with the White House? Well, now we have the receipts, and yes, they did. This morning, Jim Jordan laid out their findings, and he started with this: breaking, due to our oversight efforts, Google commits to offer all creators previously kicked off of YouTube due to political speech violations to return to the platform. But that's not all. And then it has a whole thread here that goes through it. Jordan also discovered that these tech platforms were pressured relentlessly by the Biden White House to censor certain political viewpoints and creators specifically. He said this: YouTube also admits the Biden administration censors pressure was unacceptable and wrong, confirms that the Biden administration wanted Americans censored for speech that did not violate YouTube's policies, details when YouTube began rolling it back its censorship policies on political speech after the judiciary began its investigation in the GOP Judiciary Committee, states that public debate should never come at the expense of relying on authorities. And it also promises to never use third-party fact-checkers again. And it's also warning that Europe's censorship laws target American companies and threaten American speech. So he basically says, whether you were an established YouTube presence with a massive following like Dan Bongino, or were just starting out to express your political views online, you have an opportunity to come back on the platform if you were censored for engaging in political speech. And yeah, he says they're going to start rolling back their censorship policies on political speech, including such topics as COVID and elections. So that's a big part of it. I mean, I know Philip looks at this constantly in the terms of service on YouTube, but you still can't talk about certain elections as being rigged or having problems. You can't talk about Brazil's elections. You can't talk about the American. You could talk about certain American elections, just not the one that not the ones that Donald Trump lost. You could only talk about like the ones where Hillary Clinton said the election was problematic. You could talk about that under YouTube's terms of service. Now YouTube says, hey, we're rolling it all back.
You still have to defer to the World Health Organization, even though the United States has left the World Health Organization. You still have to, you know, there are still certain things you can't say about the vaccination. So, yeah, we're still bound by those rules. I have many questions about this because we don't get, even as large of a channel as we have, we don't get a lot of support from YouTube. So those creators that were kicked off, finding someone to help you, good luck. What do you guys think that's going to be like? Is there going to be a process where you're like, hey, I was removed. Like, I my faith in that is low. Also, for those of us who were, we received channel strikes because, well, one of them was which we read Pfizer's own clinical trials in 2021, and we received a community strike for medical misinformation. Now, during that time, there were 2 weeks, and we had this happen a few times, where we could not communicate with our audience. We couldn't post a comment. We couldn't reply to comments. We could not post something saying why we were dark. They just put us basically in a timeout with our hands behind our back. At the same time, they still ran our content and they still ran ads to our content. They just didn't have to share any of that ad revenue with us. So they kept it for themselves. So given that we were given this punishment for broadcasting true information, to my mind, they stole from us then. They still sold our content and kept it all from themselves for themselves. So they're not saying they will remove those channel strikes. They are not saying that they will compensate for stealing for from creators like they did us, like they did John Campbell. I think they're still stealing from Russell Brand, aren't they?
I think so.
They monetize his content. He just doesn't get access to it. So, you know, I would like to see some, I don't want to use the word reparations, but compensation for people who were punished for things like that. It was not fair.
Well, and two things for us, like we still can't get our million subscriber play button because of that. And I remember back then YouTube was gaslighting us on X or Twitter and saying, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing this. Has nothing to do with conservative, like just denying it. And we had no idea how to even know what guidelines, because they changed all the time. And it was like by WHO guidelines, which wasn't even in their guidelines. So we would say something that wasn't against their guidelines, yet then it was.
And they wouldn't tell us. And so we would contest and say, which part of this didn't you like? And they wouldn't tell us.
Well, the same thing happened with Ukraine when we were covering the truth about the Ukraine war and we were blasted, you know, and we got banned or had content removed, and they gave us a violation on our channel for a week when we called out the propaganda of the Ukraine war and what Zelensky was doing, specifically standing in front of a green screen and filming all sorts of fake propaganda.
And we got in trouble for that. On that one, this is why I like to bring this one up, because it always blew my mind. Because what they said, the reason they gave for that was hate speech, because we called neo-Nazis, and they said that was hate speech.
Right.
Right. And so we thought, wait, are we supposed to be pro?
Right. We were like, I even wrote back to the YouTube rep, and I'm like, so what you're saying is you guys are defending Nazis now? Like that the official position of this of your network is that you are in support of Banderites and neo-Nazis? Like, that's really what you guys support? And I got no, they're like, oh, we understand your concerns, da-da-da-da-da, but we still are going to keep your channel strike, and we're going to still keep you off the air and all this stuff. Anyway, all that to say, Jim Jordan made some promises to Tucker over a year ago before Tucker got fired from Fox, or more than that. And Tucker was like calling him out. He's like, hey, you receive money from Google. You get money. Google donates to your campaign. Like, are we really going to believe that you guys are actually going to go after these people? And he did. And all these subpoenas poured in, and Google and YouTube say they're reversing course. And now they have this oversight. And the lawyers and the law firms representing Alphabet have come forward in that. So,
and now, I mean, to be honest, I'm still afraid to have done this segment right now. I still have sort of that
PTSD.
Well, yeah, like yeah. I got in trouble with Dad and I don't want to get in trouble again, right? One thing, though, that you can do if you are still watching us on this platform, and we appreciate you being here, we have tried really hard to navigate these rules, push a like, push a share, try, you know, if you're not subscribed, try to share this content if you can, because that helps, because the algorithm, we're showing you how YouTube is against wrongthink. You can only help by interacting. Leave a comment, leave a flower, whatever it is. Do that for all your favorite creators. Every time you watch something, a like doesn't, it's free, right? Just do it, and then you can help us fight the censorship machine that still exists.
Yeah, and, does that and mean subscribe. Thank you.
Backpedal so on the inoculation campaign?
What was that?
Does that mean they're going to backpedal on the inoculation campaign? You know, they want to inoculate us with the truth.
Right. That's right. We covered that not too long ago, that they were going to start pre-bunking information to get ahead of creators that they didn't like. So they were going to start programming you. They called it inoculation for things like stolen elections, vaccine information. So yeah, I have not seen where that went, but that was free for them to say under the Biden administration. So at least, no matter what you think of Trump, we live in a climate where that's no longer okay to say.
One more thing, though. They are going to roll out community notes. So,
oh, yes.
So we'll see how well that works. I don't know, but they are going to roll out community notes on the YouTube platform as well. And they're saying Meta followed suit, and now YouTube will start to offer a community notes soon. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, we'll see how that works.
That system has been so easy to co-opt too, though. You know, like,
yeah.
I see so many community notes that are just citing sources that are mainstream establishment sources, and I just don't like it.
Oh, one more thing I should point
out. Our audience is going to see through that. If we do a segment like this, and then they link to a New York Times article saying YouTube denies, you know, nobody's going to be like, well, okay, New York Times has less word
New
on
York
this.
Times?
Then okay.
Oh, Wikipedia, which is the worst website right. in the world. Like, anybody that believes a Wikipedia article is, you know, is
well,
is,
then they're not here. They're not here unredacted. So
no, and I should just say one other thing. We were talking about YouTube, and most of our audience has really sort of migrated over to Rumble anyway. So we've got like 35,000 of you watching this live on Rumble right now. And just to compare the audiences, like, we're live on YouTube and there's about 14,000 of you watching on YouTube. So over the past year and a half, because most people know that YouTube has not been a free speech platform, and Rumble has been, you've seen this massive shift. I think that's probably why that YouTube is sort of scrambling right now, because, you know,
Harrison says, we'll take pride when our stuff gets community noted.
Like, exactly.
Okay, let's have. But you know what? At least that's a substantial argument. It's not someone saying, I effing hate you, which I get on Twitter. So
yeah.
Anyhow, okay. Well, what we just talked about was a clear violation of First Amendment rights. Liberals don't care about that. What they are upset about was the cancellation of Jimmy Kimmel. And good news, coastal media elites will get their way. ABC announced on Monday that it will resume Jimmy Kimmel Live on Tuesday. That's today, after suspending him for like 1.5 days over misstatements about the murder of Charlie Kirk. But not so fast. Both Sinclair and Nexstar both say they will not air it on their syndicates. So that was how the fallout began last week, because both syndicates, who have dozens of markets that run ABC content, will not run that show in that hour. So ABC will tape it, but dozens of markets will not see it. Here's the statement by Sinclair. Like, hey, we made this decision last week. It stands. ABC, tape the show if you want to, but we made this decision. This doesn't change. Here's a statement by Nexstar. Same thing. They say, hey, if you really want to watch Jimmy Kimmel Live, you can watch it on Disney-owned streaming products. So go ahead and do that. The problem is, so many liberals canceled their Disney Plus streaming service. So will they re-sign up to watch it if they don't get it in their market? What's the plan here, dudes? Like, you're really... Your protests are doing something in the world. You're basically Rosa Parks. So what do we do now? To me, here are a few of the funniest parts of this elitist tantrum. Number one is that YouTube today admitted that they censored content at the request of the Biden administration, which was a real First Amendment issue. No liberal cared about that. No liberal politician. No, silence, crickets. So defending Jimmy Kimmel's right to lie and then avoid a government investigation rings about as vapid as a Hollywood actor. Number two, since Sinclair refused to host the show, now Democratic Senator Scott Wiener is threatening them with lawfare. He put this online today, like, okay, I'm going to break them up then if they're not doing what we want, which is exactly the kind of First Amendment violations that Democrats thought they were offended by. They don't get it. You don't understand the First Amendment, clearly. And lastly, this statement by ABC announcing Kimmel's reinstatement, where they say, last week, we made the decision to suspend him to avoid further inflaming a tense situation. So who made the decision? ABC. They're saying this independently. But the liberal chorus insisted that the Trump administration forced their hand. This statement makes it clear that it had nothing to do with any perceived government threat. This was ABC's internal decision. And there were many reports that ABC has warned Kimmel several times to stop inflaming the right, and he refuses to do so. So now that we see that this was not an issue of government intervention, will liberals retract those breathless accusations? They are not doing that. They are victory lapping, saying that their tantrum worked. Here is Senator Liz Warren saying, you know, this was a First Amendment victory. ABC just showed us it was not a First Amendment victory at all. Critical thinking would tell you that. And we can extrapolate that if a government threat was perceived, it still exists. If there is an investigation by the FCC, ABC will face it, and this statement will only implicate them in having looked into Kimmel's lies and then letting it go without retraction, unless he retracts it today in some kind of satisfactory way, which we haven't seen it yet, so we don't know. So would ABC risk that just because Hollywood had a tantrum just to save one of their own? In the end, I think it makes it crystal clear the priorities of a feckless Hollywood society. They think Jimmy Kimmel is the working class worth saving. And I say this all the time. If you don't know the Hunger Games, you better get familiar. This is the Capitol. They are defending their own. I pray someday they see how much the people in the districts truly hate them. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Well, Kamala Harris' new book drops today. How many of you guys pre-ordered it? How many of you guys were waiting for the Amazon delivery man to show up and pick up your 107 Days Kamala Harris book? She is on a national liberal media tour about some of the revelations in her book. She's asked to clarify some of the points in her book. Among the biggest revelations is that she's blaming Biden for not dropping out sooner. That's, you know, like a typical liberal can never take stock of their own misgivings and failures and blaming other people. They have to play the victim, of course. So she's the victim in this scenario because Biden wouldn't drop out earlier. So she only had 170 days to launch her campaign, and she feels reckless for not asking Biden to drop.
Wait. This assumes she would have won a primary if Biden had made the decision to step out because of his own personal introspection. She never won a primary. So she's assuming that she would have won a primary, but all data to the contrary.
I guess.
When she did primary, she got what? 3%?
Right.
That was where she was at?
Yeah. So we're being asked to imagine this imaginary fairyland where she can win a primary for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, if she only had more time
and also,
if Biden had dropped out before the primary.
Also, I'm just so confused. Does she not know how her vote for Biden in 2020 worked? Because that gave him the power to run for re-election. Did she not realize what her vote was being cast for? Mm. These are outstanding questions that are really bothering me, but please go ahead.
Well, so basically she admits that she lost because of Biden, and she feels reckless for not asking Biden to drop out earlier. Watch.
There are so many people out there who felt that President Biden shouldn't have run for re-election. And you wrote in a book that it was, quote, Joe and Jill's decision, that other Democrats decided it was Joe and Jill's decision. But do you regret not voicing your opinion in that moment?
Yes, and I actually have reflected on that, and I've written about that. I You know, I realized.
Would it have mattered if you did?
I don't know. But I can only take responsibility for myself. Mm-hmm. And on reflection, you know, and I talk about it in the context of asking a question of myself, was that grace to not bring it up to him, or was it reckless? And on my part, I do reflect on that and feel that there was a recklessness about not raising it with him. I talk about what was going through my head, right? And what was going through my head to not bring it up was that it would come off as being very self-serving and therefore maybe lack the credibility that it deserved.
You didn't win a primary. So even if she had said, he's not ready, there was no assumption it would be you.
But again, it's she's selfless. You know, that's the message. She's selfless, and she did it for the good of the country. She did it for the good of the presidency. She couldn't have asked him to drop out earlier because she's such a selfless person. She's such a good person that she didn't want to do that. So it's really about her, and it's not about the country at all, and it's not about hurting anyone's feelings or... So when she was asked repeatedly during that same time period, was he incapacitated? Was he Sleepy Joe? Was he able to complete sentences? She later admitted, and she admits in this interview that, yeah, I should have said something because, you know, he just really couldn't complete sentences. His mental capacity wasn't there. He was always tired. So she lied to all of us. I mean, we know that, but she lied to the American people. She lied to everybody.
Yeah.
And now that she's got a book, she's like, you know, I should have said something about it.
I didn't do it because I didn't want to appear self-serving.
One of the big pieces in the book, she writes this in the book, is like, why did she choose, why did she choose Governor Walz of Minnesota instead of openly gay, instead of closeted gay Walz? And why did she not choose openly gay Pete Buttigieg? As transportation secretary, why did she not choose him? And basically, she says it's our fault that voters wouldn't be able to handle it, and because you're all bigots, everyone's a bigot, and they wouldn't be able to handle like a black whatever Indian woman with a gay guy on the ticket. So it's because you guys are bigots that she didn't do this. And the openly gay Rachel Maddow somewhat pushed her on this.
She said that hurts my feelings.
Yeah, watch.
I guess I'd ask you to just elaborate on that a little bit. It's hard to hear.
Yeah.
With you running as, you know, you're the first woman elected vice president. You're a black woman and a South Asian woman elected to that high office, very nearly elected president. To say that he couldn't be on the ticket effectively because he was gay is hard to hear.
No. That's not what I said. That he couldn't be on the ticket because he is gay. My point, as I write in the book, is that I was clear that in 107 days, in one of the most hotly contested elections for president of the United States, against someone like Donald Trump, who knows no floor, to be a black woman running for president of the United States, and as a vice presidential running mate, a gay man, with the stakes being so high, it made me very sad, but I also realized it would be a real risk. No matter how, you know, I've been an advocate and an ally of,
Am I hearing this?
LGBT community yes. My entire life. So it wasn't about any prejudice on my part, but
we had such a short
period of time.
So the real prejudice, I'm not prejudiced, but I just felt like you guys were also prejudiced that you couldn't handle it. No one cares about Pete Buttigieg's sexuality. You care that he's an incompetent mayor. He was an incompetent mayor. Go ahead, Philip.
Like what kind of ally is that? Like, yes, I stand for the rights of LGBTQ people, but just get away from me. I can't be anywhere near you. I want you to be gay
me.
Over there. Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't want people to associate me with you.
We didn't have enough time.
You.
We would need more time to explain. You know, 107 days was just not enough time to educate people on how great gay people are for right. my ticket. So we needed more time.
Now, in think this about scenario. How pro DEI the Democrats are. And she's saying, I want other companies to participate in DEI and fill their racial quotas and their minority quotas and their disadvantaged quotas. But not for my campaign. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fill any quotas because I got to win.
So my question is, like, what the hell is she doing? Why did she write this book? Is she trying to run again? Because no one's going to vote for her. No one wants her. The Democratic Party absolutely doesn't want her. CNN even did an analysis post-election yesterday. Like, how favorable is it right now for Kamala Harris in the country among Democrats and other voters? Here's what CNN had to say about it. Watch.
I would just say that if you want a messenger to go against Donald Trump, you can do far better as Democrats than Kamala Harris. What are we talking about here? Well, let's take a look at her net favorable ratings nationwide. You know, back in October of 2024, she was at minus 5 points. Not exactly great, but pretty close to the zero mark, right? Pretty close to even. But now, down under she goes. She's at minus 13 points. That's an 8-point drop since the general election among the overall electorate. She is not well-liked at this particular point. The American people, they don't want this. They don't want her. And get this, she's 37 points underwater with independents. If you can't win independents, you can't win the election. And the bottom line is, with those in the center electorate, those with the, who are the most up for grabs, she is way, way, way underwater. She is definitely swimming with the fishes.
So that's CNN. That she's swimming with the fishes. I mean, literally, like, she's been killed by the mafia. She's swimming with the fishes.
I love his little interpretive dance where he jumps and dives. I've watched it 9 times.
Like, oh, man.
I can't say it enough, so I'm going to act it out. How bad. It's like this.
It's so bad.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, that's enough of Kamala Harris. But let me know in the chat room, you guys. Let us know, is she running for president? She says she's not. I mean, and like, why is she doing this? Why is she going on this tour now, sort of like scorched earth, blaming Biden and all of this stuff? It's really interesting. So let us know in the comments below. Hey, coming up here on the show, we're going to talk about President Trump. We're going to talk about perhaps his ties and money that he's received, obviously, from Israel, and his money that he's received from, you know, Palantir, and all of that as we move towards a biometric surveillance state, as we move away from cash, we move away from a cashless, we move away from cash and towards a cashless society, everything being monitored. We knew that this was coming. They would scare us about a lot of things. And then, of course, you know, the Israel lobby and President Trump and Palantir, they're all right there. They're all right there to make sure that you are surveilled and monitored, pre-crime, all of it. We're going to talk about that with Mark Goodwin in just a moment. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Connect Invest, because is your money working for you? Well, investing in real estate has never been easier. You know that savings accounts and CDs, they're offering such low returns these days. As our friend Tom Wheelwright likes to say, savers are losers because savings, you barely keep up with inflation. In fact, you don't. The stock market, that's volatile and unpredictable. One day you're up, one day you're down. Most of the time, if you're in a retirement account, you're just partnered with the government to invest in the stock market. But now you can invest in real estate short notes, which with as little as $500, with annualized returns of up to 9%. You heard me right. Real estate has a long proven track record of building wealth, but for most, the barriers are just too high. Buying a whole house or an apartment complex or what have you, it seems out of reach. But Connect Invest changes the game. Within as little as $500, you can start earning fixed monthly returns by investing in short notes, which collectively fund commercial and residential real estate products. So no property management, no market swings, no saving up to buy something, just steady annualized income return rates of up to 9%. So here's how you do it. Go to redacted.inc/invest. Fund your digital wallet with $500 or more. Select a short note, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, and then just sit back and earn monthly income through your investment team. So join thousands of investors who are growing their wealth. And for a limited time, when you sign up and fund your account today with our special link, you get a $50 bonus in your digital wallet, giving you an investment and an instant boost. So don't let your money sit in low return accounts. Take advantage of this offer and start earning fixed monthly returns. Go to redacted.inc/invest. One more time, that's redacted.inc/invest. Stop letting your money sit idle. Invest smarter, earn more, build wealth with Connect Invest.
Well, our next guest says the Great Reset is still coming. You know, we thought, oh, maybe it's over. The globalists are gone, right? But no, it's coming, but in a different way under President Trump. It's just being sold to us differently, so don't fall for it. We're not sycophants here on the show. We're happy to praise President Trump when he does something great. We're also happy to slam him when this is all being shepherded into us right now. Cashless society, biometric scanning, Palantir all ready to stand there and take over the helm to make sure that we're all tracked and monitored. Don't take my word for it. Europe, European Union, moving towards getting rid of cash altogether. They're on the record already saying that you'd be considered basically a terrorist or in the gray market if you transact in cash over a certain amount. Oh, you want to pay your gardener 500 euros? Sorry, you're a terrorist. This is what they're doing. Christine Lagarde told us that. Mark Goodwin is the author of The Bitcoin Dollar. He's an investigative journalist at Unlimited Hangout alongside Whitney Webb and friend of the show. And, you know, we just also got this word. So I want to bring Mark into the show. Mark, great to see you here and welcome back. It's been, you were spot on. I think you were on the show maybe 2 years ago and you predicted all of this. Good to see you.
Something like that. Yeah, it's great to be back, Clayton. Thanks so much.
So at the time, maybe you can just wind the clock back a little bit. What were you warning us about 2 years ago? Cashless biometrics, stable coins, U.S. dollars being backed by stable coins in order to sort of hide the debt. You know, we got $37 trillion in debt. What are we going to do? Oh, we could back it by stable coins and then we could offload it on the world and then do a rug pull, suddenly end the entire crypto, scene, right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, more or less. You know, I mean, it's obviously very complicated, you know, very, very much so by design to sort of confuse everyone about what the real play is here. And, you know, of course, it was a bit speculative, you know, a year plus ago whenever we did talk. But a lot of it has come to fruition. And we're now seeing, you know, like the special advisor to Putin the other day coming out and being like, hey, I think crypto is actually a big ploy by the United States government to deal with their debt problems. You know, that was a story that came out. And so basically the thesis of the Bitcoin dollar and the idea of, you know, offloading all of this, you know, inflationary effects, finding a buyer for the debt of the U.S. government, the quick summation of it is, you know, we all kind of know how the petrodollar works. Right, where we're offloading our inflationary effects by forcing people to buy dollars to be able to get oil. We basically recreated that system with Bitcoin and digital currency, where the vast majority of all trades for digital currency are done in dollars. So, you know, how do you deal with the debt problem? You know, you have to find someone who buys your reserve assets, and you need to increase the amount of users that use the currency, right? So you need to solve both for the reserves and for the currency that's based off the reserves. And stablecoins really perfectly fix both of those problems, where, you know, they allow anybody access to dollars with just a smartphone. Anywhere in the world now has access to dollars. And those stable coins, these digital dollars, are backed thanks to the regulation that we just saw with the Genius Act, are now being forced to be backed by U.S. treasuries and de facto, you know, U.S. debt. So we're seeing kind of all of these issues being solved very conveniently as, you know, the U.S. is now starting to kind of deal with its debt problems, debasing the dollar, and now starting to cut rates. So, you know, I think it made a lot of sense then, and now we're really seeing it start to happen. And so, of course, we'll get into these signposts of what all of this biometric and debanking capital controls have to do with all of that. But that's basically a quick summation of the Bitcoin dollar idea.
No, thank you for that. And Arthur Cottrell in our chat room says, Mark is a very smart guy that should be taken seriously. And I agree. I mean, again, if you rewind the clock back to what Mark was saying more than a year and a half ago or so, he's spot on. And now we're seeing it. I mean, just look at this headline here on Vietnam. Vietnam freezes 86 million bank accounts. Jim Rickards was on talking with Danielle Kimbone, and she was saying that, like, because they want to move Vietnam to a mandatory biometric ID system, and they would freeze these accounts as sort of a model, a sort of a trial run for a centralized digital control. And I think you're going to see that across Asia. We're already seeing, obviously, in parts of, you know, in China as well. So can you talk about this? So this Vietnam just says, hey, 86 million bank accounts frozen. We're moving you to this new system.
Yeah, I mean, I think it plays into, you know, very directly into this play, right? If you're trying to find more users for the dollar system and you're using these stable coins to do that, What that really does is it, you know, ironically, it's a very centralizing effect on monetary policy. You know, the whole the ideology of crypto is supposed to be this decentralization idea. And in many ways, that is true, of course, at a protocol level. But in actuality, for monetary policy, if you're giving every single person in the world, like, say, millions of people in Vietnam, access to dollars, all they have to do is get out of their local currency using their bank account, using a smartphone and an app, and they have access to dollars, and especially dollars that give you a yield. You know, part of that, you know, the reserves that are issued, these treasuries are giving you a little bit of a yield based on the federal funding rate. So now everybody around the world has access to dollars and access to yield, even though the dollar is, of course, you know, losing value as it's inflating. You know, it's doing better than most other countries' currencies in general. We have this sort of dollar milkshake theory idea. So you put yourself in the shoes of, you know, the Vietnam, you know, central bank or the regulators in Vietnam, the bank regulators that are doing their best to keep everybody localized in their local currency and keeping their money in the country. Now that all of the people in their country suddenly have access and are able to get out of the local currency, the central bank and the governing body suddenly has a huge issue to deal with of capital flight. And we don't want all of the money just to flow into the U.S. So how do you actually meaningfully fight that? Well, you threaten to debank people unless they, adhere to regulation and biometric digital identification systems, which, due to the nature of these stablecoins being on public blockchains, these open databases that anyone can access, if you have connected biometrics and digital IDs associated with your wallet addresses and with your ins and outs of this new digital economy, you now suddenly have this great ability to track really warrantlessly surveil anybody using these rails and have a better chance of keeping people within the system and within your local currency. So this is sort of how, foreign countries are going to try to start dealing with, this mass dollarization and therefore, via technology and therefore the opportunity for mass capital flight. So we're going to see everywhere, including the United States, I'm sure, of course, because they also want to make sure they know where their citizens' money's going. But what we're really starting to see this first rolled out in the global south, in the Eurozone, in the UK, a very sudden restriction on how much you can own and what sort of ID you have to put up and give to the governing bodies to be able to, you know, play in these regulatory modes.
The Joker in our chat room says, I go to the bank, I take out cash, and I buy with cash. Like, that sounds great, but of course, most banks and many banks don't have cash anymore, and they're moving away from having cash in their vaults. You want to take out some cash? Yeah, come back on Thursday, we may have it for you. That's been happening repeatedly. Banks are going cashless. And you talked about the Eurozone, as Bumpy in our chat says, this is what the UK government wants done in the UK, using a crypto euro dollar. So moving you away from the euro, moving you onto a digital euro.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we really saw this, you know, of course, we had been hearing about these great reset ideas, before the pandemic, of course, but that really accelerated everything and really brought a lot of these issues, you know, right to the forefront. They really attacked cash extremely heavily, whether it was, you know, putting capital controls on or how much cash you can take out, or just literally like restricting businesses from being able to accept cash, you know, for fears of viral transfer or whatever have you. But of course, this is a huge attack on financial freedom. Cash, certainly while still being fiat money and still having a lot of issues of being political money, it's a bearer asset in many ways, and it's extremely hard to track and trace, the exchange of cash between bartering parties. And that's a very good thing for folks like us that, you know, want to go buy something and not let everybody, that's a part of the trusted chain in the settlement, be able to see what's going on. So cash is a very important tool for freedom advocates, and it's something that should be fought for. Even if you are someone who is a believer or a longtime holder of digital assets, you know, cash is an extremely important check and balance to a rapidly digitalizing world. And especially when you're looking at, now we're seeing, you know, the worst of the worst worlds of, you know, digital fiat now creating a, you know, being published in a decentralized ledger, right? Where now anybody in the world who downloads the blockchain, whether it's Ethereum or Bitcoin or Solana or whatever, these chains that have a lot of stable coins on them, now anybody can see these transactions. And with just a little bit of some of that biometric digital ID spice, you can start to triangulate and heuristically analyze, you know, pretty accurately, who is spending digital dollars. So not only do you not get the freedom of fiat money and you're still using political money, now there's this open ledger aspect to it, which actually, you know, really enables warrantless surveillance at a quite an extreme level. So the war on cash, coinciding with the rapid digitalization of fiat and of stable coins, is, while digital IDs are bursting, is an extremely dangerous perfect storm of things that, you know, as you stated in your intro, unfortunately are sort of pushing us towards these pillars of, you know, Klaus Schwab's Great Reset, unfortunately.
Well, and you brought up surveillance, and Mark, I'll get you out of here on this, as we're running out of time, but I want to ask you specifically about Palantir and sort of the biometric, you know, surveillance state that we're all entering. Very, very cozy to President Trump. We know, I mean, very cozy. You've written multiple pieces on how cozy they are. I think also tied to Israel and all of this. So we're what sort of biometric system are we looking at in the United States for surveillance? I mean, you know, we see it already at the airport. Customs and Border Patrol says, right, when you walk through this particular gate, you're under surveillance, you're being watched here, your photos will be deleted. The TSA also says this, but it's much bigger than just the airport.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's happening everywhere. I mean, you're just seeing the proliferation of surveillance everywhere, whether it's by, you know, a private entity that has a strong public relationship like Palantir, which, as you said, was extremely important. The PayPal mafia, you know, Palantir was the anti-fraud algorithm at PayPal. PayPal mafia at large, Teal Musk, they were extremely important in getting Trump in office. And it should be of no surprise that we're seeing Palantir get many, government contracts and being a big part of this new push for surveillance. We're seeing this dialectic push towards, you know, hey, we got to restrict, you know, voter fraud. We have to restrict immigration. We have to restrict domestic terrorism. None of these things in a vacuum are necessarily bad, but what is the place that it's bringing us to when it's combined with cameras everywhere, digital money, and, you know, this push for digital ID? Well, someone has to run the database. Someone has to be the one putting all of this together, using their AI to analyze this and create, a database of American citizens and people just in the U.S. and people worldwide. And Palantir has really, stepped up to be right there, ready, willing, and able as the regulatory bodies of the United States are now, you know, making this something that has to occur. So as it relates to digital money, we're seeing, Palantir's Joe Lonsdale is partnering with Palantir's Peter Thiel and Palmer Luckey of Anduril, and they're actually creating a stablecoin bank in Columbus, Ohio, called Erebor, another name of a Lord of the Rings thing, which is a very common place in the Thielverse. And we're seeing them actually now start to roll out, you know, banking, highly regulated banking instruments to back stable coins, which, you know, really plays into a lot of the things I've been warning about, a lot of the things I'm concerned about as fiat money goes digital. I think Palantir is sort of just ready to take the cake here that's being made available as, you know, the Trump administration is pushing these things that are being set up as if they're for our safety. But in reality, in many ways, they are probably ensnaring us in quite a biometric panopticon, unfortunately.
I mean, that's just we just skimmed the surface here. You got to read all of Mark's incredible investigative journalism on this. It might be painful, like if you're a huge Trump lover and you don't want to see any sort of any sort of connections to the deep state and Palantir and the biometric state that we're now involved with. It might be uncomfortable, but that's what this show is all about, making you uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable right now. Mark, great to see you. Thank you for your great work. Read his work over at Unlimited Hangout, and also follow him on X. He does some great work there as well. Mark, great to see you again. Thank you for this.
Thank you so much, Clayton and Natalie. Had a great time.
I appreciate it. I feel like my brain has gotten slightly bigger.
Yeah.
When I ever talk to Mark, my brain gets a little bigger.
Right.
I appreciate that.
Don't let it explode.
No, I won't.
Don't let it go to your head.
My mind is blown, though, so thank you, Mark. All right. Coming up here on the show, we're going to talk about this Tylenol autism link and why liberals are now taking to social media and sharing videos of themselves pregnant, saying, hey, watch me. I'm going to be swallowing all this Tylenol. Like, who are they sticking it to? You're not sticking it to me. You're sticking it to the baby in your womb, for crying out loud. These people are sick and disgusting. We're going to talk about that. But first, the Fed has finally dropped interest rates. And that's great news for American homeowners. Expenses have been a major burden on families. Wages are flat. Prices keep climbing. And for many, the only way to make ends meet is lean on those credit cards. But that cycle of high interest debt makes it hard to stay ahead. If you're a homeowner, you need to call our friends over at American Financing. Right now, interest rates have dropped. Many homeowners are trying to see options in the low fives right now, trying to refinance. And if you compare that to credit cards charging rates in the 20s or higher, there's an easy path to see how you can finally put your hard-earned equity to work for you and get your budget under control. Their salary-based mortgage consultants are saving customers an average $800 a month. And if you get started today, you may be able to delay your next mortgage payment. Take control. Call American Financing today, 866-890-8434. That's 866-890-8434. And their NMLS number is 182334. You can learn more about them at NMLSconsumeraccess.org. APR rates in the fives start at 6.327% for well-qualified borrowers.
Well, no, the Trump administration did not say that Tylenol causes autism. What they announced is a plan to update warning labels and physician guidance on acetaminophen use in pregnancy. And they specifically note, take a look at their announcement, that while some studies suggest a link to neurodevelopmental issues, the evidence is mixed. They say that the government is interested in exploring this further and that physicians should exercise judgment, and that the research suggests an association, they don't say causation, and that they want more data. So what is so offensive about this? Well, every Democratic senator has taken to X and saying Tylenol doesn't cause autism. Tylenol is totally safe, despite the fact that there is scientific evidence that there is an association. So why are they so freaked out? Why are they so against curing autism? Why are they so against scientific curiosity? Here's CNN flatly denying that there's anything to see here. Like, it's done. The science is done. It's safe. We don't even need to look. Well, now pregnant ladies are taking to TikTok to publish videos like this, where they are taking Tylenol in their pregnancy with wild abandon. Now, as someone who has been pregnant several times, this is unfathomable. Most pregnant women don't drink alcohol. They don't color their hair. They don't eat many foods that they are warned about being associated with possible problems. Anything that we think that can possibly hurt the baby, we stay away from. Now, but they hate Trump so much that they're weaponizing their pregnancy to really show them putting their babies at any modicum of risk. Most women who become pregnant don't take it. Even though a study published last month from researchers, some of them from Harvard even, published this, finding a positive association of prenatal acetaminophen use with certain neurological disorders. So are liberals in the media just saying, I don't want to see that study, I'm just going to block it out, doesn't exist? Why would they do this? Why? Why don't you care to see everything? Joining us to discuss is Dr. Brian Hooker. He's the author of Vax Unvax, Let the Science Speak. He's also the father of an autistic child and the chief scientific officer of Children's Health Defense. So thank you for joining us. This is something you have been discussing for a long time. The Trump administration is clear that the data is mixed, even though we see studies suggesting association. Can you summarize what is known and unknown about this and why it would be controversial to ask questions?
Well, I think that the precautionary principle would be that if something could cause harm, that, you know, in the evidence, perhaps lacking or not completely, you know, settled at this particular point, that you would want to protect that developing baby during pregnancy and even after pregnancy. But there's really a growing body of literature. The earliest literature that came out regarding the connection between Tylenol and autism was a paper that was authored by a military doctor by the name of Stephen Schultz in 2008. And in the body of literature, there's probably 20 or more papers that show that there's a strong link between the use of acetaminophen during pregnancy, after pregnancy, in the peripartum period, and also postnatally in babies, that associates it with autism. And I think that, you know, based on this growing body of literature, yes, there is some conflicting literature that there are some studies that have come out recently in Sweden. You know, I think that they're over-controlled for similarities within the populations that they were comparing. But there is such a growing body of evidence regarding acetaminophen and autism. And acetaminophen was never really appropriately attested in the 1950s and 60s when it was first rolled out. And we need to be able to ask the scientific question, warn individuals of a potential issue, given the growing body of scientific literature, and protect our children from all harm at all cost.
Now, they're not saying that we know it's causal, that's the end of the story. They're saying they want to know more, and Democrats are taking such offense to this, like, we actually don't want to know anymore. We're done here. The science is in. Why do you think that they're so defensive and resistant to knowing more?
I think that there is, you know, a lot of bad science, and there's a lot of bad culture that was fostered around the COVID-19 pandemic when we heard things like settled science and trust the science. You know, those are two very, very unscientific phrases. Science is never settled. You know, we're always asking questions. We can always do better for our children. We can always produce a safer medicine. We can always produce a safer vaccine. And then trusting the science, I think that more appropriately, we need to test the science and to see the backlash associated with this, where somebody would take a medicine that, yes, there is a risk, there are known risks, there's a warning label that's associated with the packet insert of Tylenol and of generic brands of acetaminophen, and to do this in protest is really, you know, harming the own your own life and the life of the unborn child within you.
Now, we saw that data was hidden from us when the COVID vaccine was rolled out. And so we never had proper informed consent. We were never warned about the risks of myocarditis. We were never told that it was not tested for transmission. And that was pushed on us. So what we see now seems to me an obvious correction in that you can still go take Tylenol with wild abandon if you want to, but there is something that should be available for you to evaluate so that you have full informed consent. And I guess the backlash would be, we don't want that, right?
I don't understand that. You know, as a parent of a vaccine injured child, the vaccine information sheet that my wife and I signed to consent for his vaccination was woefully inadequate. So more information and more knowledge is more power. And so, you know, having that information, having the information in hand that we have right now, could have prevented my son's vaccine injury. You know, having information that could prevent your child from having low functioning, profound autism. This is not, you know, this is not something, some type of glorified, you know, neurodiversity. This is a child that perhaps can't speak. has trouble learning, can't control their body, has gut dysbiosis, can't even control their bowel or their bladder. You know, these are the things that we're looking at. When you look at people that are on the low functioning end of the autism spectrum, I would not wish that life on anybody, you know, whatsoever. And so to be so cavalier about this, then I think that you need to take a step back, educate yourself, and bring yourself to a conclusion that, okay, maybe it's not politically palatable. Maybe you do not agree with everything that President Trump is doing or President Trump is saying, but let's take the information for information's sake and do the best that we can for our children.
Well, right. If we take a look, the UK government is saying, you know what, ignore this because Trump said it. And so, you know, we're not going to take that into account here in the UK. Do what you want. It's called CalPoll there. So this is really a shoot the messenger just because, is there any other way to see it?
No, I wish that there was some level of justification that could protect these children while, you know, they are taking a known risk. You know, the parents of the children taking known risk by administering prenatal and postnatal Tylenol, you know, especially, and the research and the data show that there is at least some type of risk through age 5. So when President Trump was actually warning, you know, regarding Tylenol given to babies, you know, postnatally, that was a warning that you should be taken to heart. So, you know, shoot the messenger, cancel culture, this whole thing, it is not rooted in science. It is not rooted in medicine. We can do better for our children. This administration is giving us information that we've been asking for years. This is a gift that we're being given, and we need to be able to use it wisely to protect our children.
I'm sorry if this upsets you, but here's a graphic that's been circulating in response to this, that autism doesn't need to be cured. As a parent of an autistic child, how does that strike you? I hope you don't mind me asking.
One of the worst things that a parent can ever go through is to see their child in pain, in excruciating pain that you cannot do nothing about. That is my world of autism, is that, and it's very, very well known that there's a gut-brain axis, that a lot of children have gut dysbiosis. Even Simon Baron-Cohen, who is one of the forerunners in the forefront of autism research over the past 30 years, has acknowledged gut issues in autism. That type of debilitating pain that leads not only to gut pain, but also chronic head pain and chronic neuroinflammation, you know, where a child is literally, in order to get their mind off the pain, hitting themselves somewhere else in their bodies. This is the autism that we're talking about. Yes, does it need to be cured? Absolutely. If you're neurodiverse, if you have a different way of thinking, and that's the extent of your autism diagnosis, God bless you. This is not what my family is dealing with. And this is not what at least 40% of the autism diagnoses in the U.S. are, is low functioning autism and debilitating autism.
Right. As a parent, I understand what you're saying, and I can't imagine that there are people who would not go to the ends of the earth to give your child the best chance of living in this hard world as you possibly can. So to say, no, to hell with it. I mean, well, then let's just drink all we want during pregnancy and shoot up some crack and do whatever you want, right? That's the case. That's asinine to think that way.
These political statements are not worth your child's health and well-being. Think about the individual that is growing, that is nurturing, that you've been given this gift of. You know, one of the things that I can remember, you know, for the longest time, one of the most exciting portions of my life, even leading up to it, was becoming a father. And so then to see, you know, that something happened to my son that was preventable was very, very difficult. You know, and I will say, in hindsight, when we saw my son regress into his autistic condition, it was after treating him for a vaccine injury that we treated with Tylenol. He was fevering. Mm-hmm. And he was fevering uncontrollably. So we were using rounds of Tylenol and baby aspirin. And that was the first time that he encountered Tylenol in his life. And that did lead to an autistic regression. So if you think that, you know, this is all fake news, that it's wrong, please listen to me, listen at least to my personal story and my personal appeal as a father, as well as the scientific career that I've devoted for the last 24 years looking at the causes of profound autism.
Well, you're a hero, Dad. I'm so glad to have got to talk to you about this and break down the politics and continue to see what we need to be looking at. Again, the book is Vax Unvax, Let the Science Speak. And our guest has been Dr. Brian Hooker. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Oh, he was great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts on this in the chat room. People are saying it's just heartbreaking. It's just like,
these
people need to be locked up.
Anything you would do? I mean, you can't know what it means to be a pregnant woman. Is there anything that you would do to put your child at risk because you hate a politician so much? So like, you know, if Gavin Newsom, who I think is loathsome, said, you know, don't give your children milk, would I withhold milk from them, even though I think it's important for their puberty? Like, is there anything you would do with your child's life to spite a politician? How much can you hate Trump to do that to your child? I cannot relate to
this.
But
we're talking about pure evil. I mean, these people are evil. I mean, these are the crazy people that shot Charlie Kirk. I mean, these people are out of their minds evil. These are the same people that, like, when voting for, like, a... you know, day of remembrance for Charlie Kirk could say, you know, 50 of them say, no, we can't do that. Like, these right. are the people, these are the crazy people. Like, if you find, if there's a study, and by the way, you know, this, as you point out, this data comes from Harvard. Like, a lot of data came from
Liberals
Harvard.
Liberals love Harvard.
Like a liberal, like the mecca of liberalism, Harvard. Right. Like, all RFK Jr. and President Trump were doing is basically collating that data and presenting it to you.
Yeah.
Like, it's not pulling it off store shelves. I've seen even people going into like Walgreens and sticking sticky notes onto Tylenol. And they're like, this does not cause autism. Like, in, you know, people are sticking like yellow sticky notes on it just to like remind people.
Oh, that's
people.
Very official.
Well, like, yeah. Oh, okay, I'm pregnant. This may affect my fetus. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad this person put a sticky note on here. So I'm just going to do that.
I don't know about you, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now they love corporations.
I don't know about you guys, but I make most of my major medical decisions based off of post-its I find just in random locations.
Right.
Yeah. Does that mean you're just constantly looking for Andre the Giant?
Always.
Either post-its or stickers. I wanted to say this. I failed to answer this question, but there is also association that when a pregnant woman has a high fever, there is an association with neurological disorders. So it begs the question, how do you make that choice, Tylenol or rocking out the fever? And this is something that pregnant women should speak to their doctor about and have full data in order to make informed consent about this tough choice. So I wanted to make sure that that was in there because I'm not ignorant about all of the dangers of getting sick while you're pregnant. Mm.
Shane Goyen says, is it leucovorin to help counteract some of the effects of autism? I mean, I think, isn't that what also they talked about, RFK Jr.? He was on TV talking about leucovorin. I don't know if leucovorin.
Yes.
Yeah,
he does mention the drug that he wants more investigation into, and I'm not familiar with it, so that's something for another time.
Oh, brother! All right,
Well, we're going to take your super chats in a. What were you saying, David?
He didn't.
That
say
was anything. In the video that we played at the beginning of the show. He was talking about that.
Okay,
great.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, so we're going to take your super chats in just one second. But before we do that, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bright Core Nutrition because, of course, our bodies are under attack from toxins everywhere. It's enough to make you paranoid, the air you breathe, the food you eat, the products that you use, being exposed to mRNA technology, 5G. You know, we have all these studies showing an association with negative health. We just don't know. So the best thing that we can do is optimize the health that we can control. That's why in this house, we all take Kimchi One from Bright Core Nutrition. Each capsule is packed with over 900 strains of probiotics, live enzymes, and antioxidants to flush out toxins, rebuild gut balance, and fortify your immune system against the daily assault. A strong gut means better resistance, more energy, sharper focus, smoother digestion, stronger protection from the inside out. Kimchi One is an all-natural, non-GMO, dairy-free, gluten-free, made 100% in the USA by a company that truly cares about your health and your freedom. So if you want to defend your body naturally, this is where you start. Head on over to mybrightcore.com/redacted. If you use the code redacted, you'll get 25% off your order. Again, go to mybrightcore.com/redacted or call the number on your screen and you can ask further questions. You can get up to 50% off and free shipping. One of the best deals right now is free shipping and a bottle of vitamin D3 with your order. So again, detoxify your body, rebuild your gut. mybrightcore.com/redacted.
Learning something about the ostrich farm owner. By the way, we're going to have Roger Stone on the show tomorrow. We ran out of time today, unfortunately, but he'll be back tomorrow. Ostrich farm owner Katie Pazinetny, who we had on the show, obviously she's been pleading for help from Canadian leaders about the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is there at her farm right now, trying to cull these 400 ostriches. You know, and apparently one of the machine operator companies that was being used by the government said, we're not going to be involved in this. And they basically said, screw you, which is great. There seemed to be some sort of like a last minute reprieve, but I don't know where that stands right now. So again, we're watching it closely, and we'll see. Hopefully we can have somebody from there on the show tomorrow, because there's a heavy police presence right now at the farm. They're actively trying to get these ostriches, which is just horrible, an absolute overreach by the authoritarian Marxist government of Canada.
There is no logic to what they're doing. There's none. No. It is literally just reprisal for not doing what you were told, because there's no other basis for it. It's just compliance.
It's just disgusting. They have not even tested these birds, but they're going to try to kill them anyway. And it has the reaction of Bobby Kennedy and the United States government as well. They're calling on them to not do this, but yeah, they're there. The RCMP is there, trying to get these ostriches over bird flu.
They threatened them with fines if they tested the birds. They're not there. It's like they won't even allow them to prove that there's no risk.
It's ridiculous. And there are reports that Katie was arrested. I'm going to text her here in a minute to see hopefully that's not the case. We'll have an update.
Yesterday,
for you.
We put in the newsletter that there was someone who came and said, we have a warrant, and if you come down and accept it, you know, then we won't have to use force. And she said, will you arrest me? And he said, I'm pretty sure they won't. Just come and accept the warrant. And if you don't accept it, then this can go this way. So it continues to be completely antagonistic from the Canadian government. She is a Canadian citizen. If they can do this to her, they can take your pets. You know, I mean, this is just, I don't understand how the whole world is not up in arms in this. So let's watch it.
This is them showing they can just come and just snatch your livelihood.
Yeah.
Because they say it takes like 30 years or so, like some of these birds have been, so it takes so long to raise these birds that they couldn't just start over. And so they're literally just zapping this entire family's livelihood, just gone.
And I believe if I heard correctly, so they said, we'll take the whole farm. We'll take the whole place.
I just messaged Katie and I'm hoping to get a response here. And if I do get a response here in real time, I will bring it to you. All right. So let's take a few of your super chats and then get you out of here for the day. Mr. Mike says, I jumped on and may have missed it, but what are your thoughts on the FCC chastising ABC about Kimmel? As a conservative, I think it was wrong move, even though Kimmel lied. I agree. I mean, I think, you know, I don't want the government telling broadcasters what to say. However, under the FCC license code, you cannot knowingly push false information as it relates to a national tragedy. That's literally in the FCC's code for ABC broadcasting. Like, a broadcaster on ABC News is not allowed to go on the air after the Challenger explosion and report a totally fake story on purpose, knowingly doing that. Like, you could lose your license. And it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat. It doesn't matter. Tom Brokaw couldn't do that.
Like, I don't think an investigation would have been out of order. I think that would have been fine. I think what most people were upset about was that they perceived it as a threat and that ABC acted out of a perceived threat. Now, a perceived threat like that, I don't think would hold up in court. Also, ABC has now admitted that they acted independently. And so that won't help them if there is a threat. So by and large, yes, I think the government should not coerce should not get involved. We saw that in the YouTube. I don't think this was the case of that. I think that Kimmel's ratings were so bad that he's been warned. Other late night shows are on the chopping block, and there are reports he's been warned repeatedly. And now, you know, they're gonna endear liberals and get a renewed backlash from conservatives, which they were already facing in the first place. So they're back to square one. So, yeah, this is, you know, I don't like government overreach. We're always free speech purists. I really don't think this was the case that was the case here.
Patrick Cattermole says, but it was comedy, though. Was it? Was it comedy?
Well, okay. Are you allowed to make a comedy about the Challenger being faked or something like that? Are you allowed?
Yeah.
Are you? And again, it was ABC News that made that call. So he's under ABC News, not ABC Entertainment, I believe. Right? Let me double check that. And again, it's a public license. They have a public license, so the FCC can make an investigation. And maybe that investigation would have been, okay, this was, you know, fine because it was a joke. Then it could play itself out.
The other theory is, and I've been thinking about a lot about this, this could be like a psyop similar to maybe like the Cracker Barrel plan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. That's a bridge too far. Someone in the chat says that Redacted believes in Santa. I do believe in Santa.
I'm wrong. It was not ABC News. It was ABC and Disney. So
my 9-year old might be nearby over here. So yeah, I do believe in Santa. I believe in the magic of Christmas. My point. Oh, Cracker Barrel. The whole that might have been like a psyop, you know, like, hey, they don't really want to do this. And now so many people are going to go to Cracker Barrel because they reversed course. But that doesn't really make sense because they spent tens of millions of dollars to retrofit their stores, put up new signs, hire a new artist logo. So you really spent tens of millions of dollars as your stock was cratering in order to do that. So maybe this was one big publicity stunt. But the thing is, this will only work for the next few days. As we head into the weekend and next week, people are going to go back to their old habits. They're not going to watch Jimmy Kimmel. They might watch it tonight to see if he says something, like if he comes out and apologizes, or, you know, they want to see his response because everyone loves a train wreck, you know? So they'll probably watch him tonight, maybe even tomorrow. But next week, maybe the week after, it'll return to normal. It's going to return to him only getting 127,000 people in the demo watching his show. And it's going to go back to normal. No one watches late night television anymore. No one watches Jimmy Kimmel. That's the fact. I'm sticking to the facts. Arthur Haynes says the 1990, the WHO took homosexuality off the mental disorder list. It was from political pressure, not scientific evidence.
Okay, Arthur. I've never heard that.
They also took off transgender.
You're thinking of the DSM, not the WHO. I don't think we know anything about the WHO and mental disorders, do we?
What am I thinking of, though? I'm thinking of
the DHM.
But I'm thinking of gender.
Gender dysphoria.
Gender dysphoria was also taken off because of pressure, political pressure. Supreme Steve says it's a miracle you guys haven't been banned. Well, I know. We've been banned many times, but usually it's a week or two at a time that they banned us.
But let's knock on wood.
We learned to dance a long time ago.
Yeah.
What would you say?
I said we learned how to dance a long time ago. Like we know how to walk those edges.
Well, we read their terms of service on YouTube. And so we don't, there's like three things you can't say. And we're just, we're very clear that we just don't say them. So
we might indicate to you what we're trying to say. And then it's up to you to pick up what we're putting down.
Sandra Flett says, since David Letterman, late night shows are no more. Chris Byro says, Craig Ferguson was the best late night host in many years. Nothing decent since. Yeah, I mean, I grew up loving Carson and Letterman. And then, but
I was very big on Arsenio, but I wasn't allowed to stay up for it.
Arsenio. Oh, my God. Well, you're from Oakland, so you would have been like in on that, like, I wanted like the hip-hop.
Oh, come on. Everybody liked Arsenio. What's wrong with Arsenio Hall? He was good.
I used to watch Arsenio.
Yeah.
I watched it all the time.
I watched it back in the day.
It was good.
Because I loved late night television back in the day. I was sort of obsessed with it.
And we were kids at the time, and there was no overt political message other than helping me to love Paula Abdul even more than I already did. So, yeah, I don't know. You guys let us know.
A late night centrist is needed, Sunshine says.
Well, I think that's what you get in Greg Gutfeld. He's a libertarian.
Yeah.
You know, that's why his show is doing so well and actually beating network TV.
Yeah. So. I mean, I loved watching Letterman when he would do stupid, you know, stuff, you know, just get on the phone and randomly prank call people. Like, that was what I enjoyed that stuff at the end of the day. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for your super chats. Thanks for interacting, hanging out with us. Tomorrow, yeah, we will have Roger Stone on the show. We're going to talk more deeply about the JFK connection here. We just ran out of time today, so we will do that. We've also, I believe, we got Ashton Forbes on the show tomorrow because he has some big revelations about MH370 and plasmas as nuclear weapons. We're going to talk about that on the show tomorrow as well.
All right. See you tomorrow. Thanks for being here. And remember the story we did about YouTube censorship. Help out your creators, your favorite creators. You know, leave a comment, leave a meaningful emoji, not a sexual one, please. We prefer that.
Do not put an eggplant emoji. I don't want to see. I just send those to you. When she's like, hey, what are you up to? What do you want to do? And I just send her an eggplant emoji.
I don't think that helps us if we get a lot of, you know, it's nonsensical emojis.
You know, eggplant emojis. But hey, did you tell them about the newsletter?
No, I will tell you about the newsletter that comes out every Monday through Thursday, the days that this show is live. You can find it at redacted.inc. It's totally free. I try really hard to make sure you have links to original source material so that you can study for yourself. It's not required that you agree with our take on it. We just want to make sure that you are informed. And there's no paywall there. It's not an upsell. There's nothing behind a paywall. If I link you to something that has a paywall, I try to find you the public link. I really try to do this for our audience so that we are all on the same page of where the information is. So please do subscribe to the Redacted newsletter, redacted.inc. Put in your email address. Free. Off to the races. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.